This is Jack Reyes.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Sure.
You'd have to be pretty tough if there's a weapon that will save the lives of millions of people and the sufferings of tens of millions. This is the antithesis. This medicine is not hemophobic. You don't build a tolerance for it. It is not a sedative. It doesn't put you down. It has beneficial side effects by the bushel. And it's extremely safe. The rare side effects, which are mostly skin rash, you stop and it goes away. So everything is safe.
Sometimes you get a little skin rash.
You can get an allergic reaction to any medicine.
Wow.
It's very effective. In the low doses that we get. People have tried to kill themselves with this medicine without success. It's remarkably safe. It's remarkably
safe. Let me ask you, when you talk about dosage, what do you mean now? What is the prescribed dosage? I suppose it depends on the symptoms, but what are you?
Could you just answer the question?
Depends on where you are.
Individual, and actually, one individual can take 300 milligrams on a particular day and another 100 on another day.
Well, tell me, what is a milligram? Is one
milligram? One capsule. 100 milligrams is a capsule.
It's a capsule. So generally speaking, though, the prescription is one or two or three or more.
Well, as you said before, the presence of the epileptics is 3 to 4 a day. I myself have been taking 100 milligrams every morning for breakfast. And whenever I feel like it, whenever I say, should I shouldn't I? The answer is I should. I take a second. But
at night?
Whenever I get the feeling that I need the second. But that happens maybe 2 or 3 times a month. Sometimes I go...
Usually you only take one.
I always take one.
And but at once?
In the morning. Because it is sort of preventative of the aggravations. Once you get yourself a little stirred up, it'll stop you from going further, but you can stir up for the day a little bit. But the second one, you see, the wonderful thing is that if you take the second one for a week in a row, then you wake up one day and you won't need the second one. You don't build a tolerance to need two, and then three, and then four. And, Mr. President, this medicine, the whole method of this medicine is unique. It doesn't conflict with alcohol. It doesn't conflict with the other tranquilizers. It works in a different system. It regulates the electrical activity in the cell, and every cell in that body, every live cell, has electrical activity. And it does it in the most unbelievably benign way. You just can't believe it. And you also can't believe the difficulty it is to get anybody in the medical profession to do anything. If you tell them, test this medicine for blood pressure, if you can get them interested. Now, blood pressure is the simplest thing to test that there ever could be. You take a false blood pressure, you give them the lantern, and an hour later, you take it again. Now, we've had this done by 10 to 4 different doctors and 10 different patients, and the evidence is so clear that I've got $1 million to a bag of peanuts that the lantern is useful against blood pressure. Blood pressure is a problem with an estimated 25 million sufferers in this country. And the medicines that they use vary from fairly, some of them are fairly innocent, to quite dangerous. And all of them have some side effects. Dilantin has beneficial side effects. This is a medicine of good health. I've got a Russian baby. I haven't got time to show you all these things, where they suggest that it will prevent aging. Incidentally, just not exactly in passing, I met a man of Vector Rebbe, who's of the Supreme Soviet and chairman of the board of public health there. Oh, you see, there, the quality rises to the top in government.
Yeah, that's all they have.
And here, the dregs, I'm sorry to say, go into government.
Just the jackasses.
The ones that can't make it in the outside life. And they see their mission, Mr. President, I'm afraid, is to thwart whoever comes in to see them because
they want to kick the others around.
And they don't notice the difference when somebody like ourselves come in with no financial interest at all. I'm trying to pass on to the people what happened to people. But they don't distinguish between them. Now, they've sniffed around us very thoroughly and found nothing wrong, but that's the best they can do. Maybe, do you know about the exchange of letters between Bill and Rockefeller and the Secretary?
Yeah, I have that.
Well, that was the best that they felt they could do, and that was the thing that we were going to go to Robert Lewis to do this story about. And it's so long ago now, but left us out entirely. But maybe it's just as well, because I don't know. When Mr. Lewis met with me, he brought a fellow named Albert Maisel, who was a writer that he read at the time.
He does a lot of, he does their medical writing.
Right.
Supposed to be a director.
Well,
or not, but he is.
Well,
he's a good writer.
I think he is, and you know how writers are. He told me right off, look, this is not going to be about you. And I said, that's wonderful. I don't want it about me. And he said, I'm going to have to check these things out, and I want to see, you know, I'm going to see who I want to. I want you to check it out. I just want the facts. So, if you understand that background,
sure.
And he also said he was very careful. Well, when we got through with him, I mean, we wouldn't let him get away. He said, well, I know enough. And he said, well, no, you don't know enough, because you cannot cram a whole new, I don't know what to call it, a whole new
method, process.
Method, process, or whatever it is, of medicine, in just a couple of days. So, we held on to his coattails until we felt that he knew enough of the facts. Then he went home, and he thought he was going to have it in a couple of weeks, and it took him about 2.5 months, and he told me it was the hardest article he ever had to write. He'd written 300 of them, because there's so much, he said, and I can't put it all in, and I was sympathetic with it. And this is a rough outline of what it's going to be, and I'm happy to say...
All right, okay.
Can I read just the beginning? And
sure,
the beginning?
Sure.
Almost 5 minutes late.
I read your other your own thing that you've done before. That you did.
You did.
That was a year.
Well,
a year ago.
You were one of the nicest people in the world. But most people say they were.
No, I do. I always do.
I know.
I always take briefcases full, and I read on airplanes and helicopters and the most unimaginable places, and also late night.
I don't know what your pressure for time is, but have I got 15 minutes?
Sure.
Well, I think it might...
Yeah, I've got... I've got
I can do this in 15
minutes. I've got to about 20 minutes till 2:00.
So may I... I'm going to skip through this. I'm going to
finish it.
All right. I think it's important that we read this together. All right. It sounds good for me to read through.
Go ahead. Sure. No, let me hear it.
All right. It says, the strange case of the misunderstood medicine. Long tag is a specific for just one disease. DPH is last winning wide recognition as a unique nerve cell stabilizer capable of controlling or preventing an amazingly wide range of serious disorders. Okay. Way back in 1936, two young neurologists, Drs. Tracy Putnam and Houston Merritt, envisioned an ideal medication, one that would free millions of victims of violent convulsive seizures known as epilepsy. Doctors had no satisfactory means of preventing these dreaded seizures. All they could do was treat their patients with the bromides of phenobarbital. The best substance, phenobarbital, failed to help a large proportion of these patients, and even when it did work, to be effective, it frequently had to be used in such large doses that it resulted in heavy and undesirable sedation. At Boston City College, the hospital, Dr. Putnam and Merritt, well aware of these problems, set out to say that the substance was more effective and did not cause sedation. They knew that many chemical cousins of phenobarbital had been discarded precisely because they lacked any sedative. This medicine had been tested, and because it wasn't bad, they decided it couldn't be good. It didn't have the sedation. Thus, they obtained scores of these rejected compounds from Park Davis. For more than a year, they tested each of these compounds in experimental animals in which convulsions were electrically induced, until finally they found on DPH that they identified with anticonvulsant effectiveness, much greater than phenobarbital. By 1940, DPH had become the drug of choice for control of seizures. Since then, it has enabled millions of people who had previously had convulsions to lead normal, productive lives. Few drugs, in fact, have done so much for so many as a simple, inexpensive chemical. This is but part of the story of DPH, for in their first clinical report, Dr. Putnam and Merritt had noted that children treated with this remarkable drug not only ceased suffering convulsions, but also became better behaved, more amenable to discipline, and did much better in school. Others, too, published reports that confirmed the fact that DPH brought about striking improvements in American concentration and personality. In view of these highly beneficial effects, Dr. Putnam and Merritt had urged that the potential usefulness of DPH in the treatment of other disorders be thoroughly investigated. Tragically, however, the dramatic effect of DPH in controlling seizures led most physicians to think of it as a specific for epilepsy alone. Tagging it an anticonvulsant, they thus overlooked many indications that might be valuable in the treatment of other disorders. Only rarely, in fact, did the imagined physician so much as try to use DPH to treat anything except epilepsy. And the few that did so found that their reports of its effectiveness were ignored by their colleagues. excruciating migraine headaches. 10 years, no one followed. For 10 years, no one followed up this clearly. Then in 1950, Drs. Richard, Roundtree, and Wyman reported that they'd given DPH to numerous migraine victims. DPH had declared staves off migraine attacks almost as effectively as it prevents convulsive seizures and the epileptic. 6 more years passed before neurologists William McCarlin and William Ingram reported that they too had used DPH for control of migraine, and found it was by far the most useful drug in the successful treatment of the syndrome. In similar fashion, evidence of the effectiveness of DPH in relieving another common, extremely painful nervous disorder, tic doloroi, was long ignored. Victims of
what do you call it?
Tic doloroi. It's called trigeminal neuralgia also.
And it's a, what is it?
Terribly painful. It's not really a tic. It's a tremendous pain, shooting pains from the trigeminal.
Remember, Dallas used to have a tic.
Go ahead. Was that
hurt? Possibly,
sure. Sure.
He used to have a...
It helps against that type of tic, too. This is excruciating painful. I had a man in my office 3 days ago, Mr. President, who's given $31 million to hospitals, and he's had this horrible disease for 2 years.
Yeah.
You see, I'm under the pressure of time again, but
right.
within an hour, this man responded to this medicine. He has to come to a landing together. And he couldn't eat bread. He slurred his speech. Apparently, he knows you, by the way, because he told me what you eat for lunch. I didn't tell him. Well, anyhow, that's the only case of tic doloroi that was coming to the office, but anyhow, tic doloroi is long gone. Victims of this strange malady experience stabbing pain originating from the trigeminal nerve spreading throughout the face and jaw. In extreme cases, this fellow had it in the tongue, by the way. Patients are completely incapacitated by these twitching facial tics. Of course, ordinary pain relievers and even opiates were usually inadequate. Think of that now. Doctors frequently had to resort to severing the nerve itself. Even this drastic measure often proved no more temporary relief. As early as 1942, Dr. Bergman of Bordeaux, France, reported that he treated 3 patients with DPH and achieved complete and lasting relief of pain. Yet for 9 years, neither France nor elsewhere did any physician follow up Dr. Bergman's experiment. Then in 1951, Dr. Bergman published a second article, this time reporting on the relief of tic doloroi of 16 out of 17 patients. This was also overlooked, except at the clinic in Würzburg, Germany, where Hans-Peter Jensen treated 45 people with it, provided relief but all the five. In this country, the first report of the use of DPH against trigeminal neuralgia by Milton Ende was 1957, 15 years after Dr. Bergman's first demonstration. By the way, he found 9 out of 9 successful, and he couldn't believe it because the success was so quick and so prompt. He even said that in his paper. From even the early evidence of DPH's remarkable beneficial effects on personality and behavior went unnoticed by most of them. You see how this is beginning to spread. This is almost even amazing. Personality and behavior went unnoticed by most physicians. All through the 1940s, medical journals published only 5 reports of attempts, all of them successful, to utilize DPH to relieve the temper flares of non-epileptic young adults. And throughout the entire decade of the 1950s, only one such report was published. Things might have gone on this way indefinitely if one imaginative and dogged persistent layman messmate had not fallen ill. Within a short period of less than 10 years, Jack Dreyfuss built the Dreyfuss Fund, one of the largest, most successful mutual funds, in the process of becoming a multimillionaire. But in 1959, this incredibly energetic, clear-thinking man began to experience, I wrote all this myself,
sure,
experienced a series of deeply disturbing symptoms. I'm reading this part of this because it is relevant. He's become depressed. His mind was continuously busy. He couldn't stop thinking, and almost invariably the thoughts which he could not turn off were unhappy ones, pessimistic, angry, and fearful. You know that. Doctors were unable to find a cause, nor did he have any important realistic problems that could account for this condition. Medication, psychotherapy, wrote off partially and temporarily. Then an extraordinary thing happened. Dreyfuss, a layman with no previous medical training, selected for himself one medicine, DPH, out of some 100,000 in the following year, and it worked. Steps in how he picked DPH were given in detail in a paper read at the meeting of the American College of Neuropsychopharmacology in 1966. In this paper, he gave reasons why it comes to the hypothesis that he has disturbance in body electricity. This paper also described how he discussed with his physician as having seen someone with an epileptic attack, and his feeling that the epileptic attack was similar to an electrical explosion. His physician told him the epileptic does in fact have an electrical problem, and this is established in the brain of the test. Dreyfuss then asked if he tried the medicine which was used to treat the epileptic problem. The epileptic physician told him he wasn't epileptic, but I'm kidding now, but since One capsule a day to help the time and loss of psychotherapy. Symptoms of other things accompanied by pessimistic anger and fearful thoughts went away. He felt no sedative effect from GBH on any other all day. Things just seemed to go back to normal. With the discipline to be simple, his energy returned full force. Since GBH was not thought of as anything other than anything convulsive, Dreyfus felt quite likely this improvement was only a coincidence. However, during the next year, he sent several friends and acquaintances with similar symptoms to a doctor for treatment of GBH. All promptly got better. Although Dreyfus' background was not a medical, but a struggling research area, and he had an excellent set, this embarrasses me to read it. Anyhow, I tried 8 cases out of 8, and it was too much of a coincidence. And then I went to see a doctor, Suckling, and I checked my bioelectrical ideas, and he said that they weren't unreasonable. And then I set up the Dreyfus Medical Foundation with Dr. Tanner, and the initial objectives of the foundation were either to prove or disprove that DPH was other than anticonvulsive. This did not take long. Soon the objectives became much broader, and we explored communicative effects and so forth. And then Dr. Bogash, who was trained brain by a chemist and psychiatrist, became general director. Then we collaborated with dozens of physicians. Then I gave up my Dreyfus Fund and Dreyfus Corporation. Then he goes on and uses money, I'm sorry, he says, since 1963, the Medical Foundation spent more than $7 million on research with various investigators, Johns Hopkins, Massachusetts General, Northwestern, University of Pennsylvania, and so forth and so on. Currently, the foundation financing more than 40 clinical laboratory studies in Britain, this country, and Australia. I'll just skip some more of this stuff about us. In another important field, cardiology, use of DPH has already saved lives of thousands of heart disease victims. At Baylor University back in 1950, physiologists Drs. Harris and Coconut have been seeking a means for preventing tachycardias, the often deadly disturbance of the rhythm of the heart that may cause a heart attack. Because these wild electrical discharges in the heart seem to have similar to the brainstorms of epilepsy, they decided to see if they could do it. And that's the size of experimental animals. They induce heart attacks by temporarily tying off arteries that feed the heart muscle. 4 to 8 hours later, each animal began to experience a typical tachycardia attack. Their heart races fast at 260 beats a minute. But when they injected these animals with DPH, the beating of their hearts quickly slowed to a normal rate. Harris and Coconut published their findings in the American Journal of Physiology. Not until 7 years later, then cardiologists used this. Then Dr. Leonard was called as a consultant in the last ditch attempt to save a heart disease victim on the edge of death with paroxysmal tachycardia. After every known measure had failed, he had let her recall the long, gnawed work of Harris and Coconut, injected the solution of DPH and dying in advance. Within 2 minutes, the heart rhythm returned to normal. Over the next few days, whenever tachycardia began to recur, the land promptly halted the particular attack. From then on, protected by small oral doses of DPH, the patient made an uneventful full recovery. The reputation of DPH as a specific for epilepsy, however, have led most heart specialists to view it as a one-case report. Then he goes on to talk about how, for instance, but few did use it. Usually the last result also found an effect. By 1967, Mercer and Osborne in Vancouver, Canada, used in 774 serious cardiac arrhythmias and found that many types of arrhythmia, DPH, was superior to clonidine and cocainamide, both of which have side effects, which provide the best name. I just read it myself. Since then, as numerous additional investigators have reported equally dramatic results, hundreds of cardiologists have come to rely on DPH as their preferred level. Weapon against many life-threatening arrhythmias. The acceptance of DPH in the treatment of heart disorders is now evidenced by being listed as an antiarrhythmic agent in the AMA drug evaluation. Still not the Park Davis, but this is such a strange world we live in. One of the other projects sponsored by the Dreyfus Foundation was conducted in 1947 by Oscar Resnick of the Worcester Foundation. It's subject to a dozen prisoners, all serving time for violent crimes, all given to frequent tempestuous outbursts. On DPH, the disposition and behavior of all these brooding, angry, and fearful men underwent a quick and spectacular change for the better. When the DPH was replaced by identical-looking but nice placebo tablets, within a few days, each relapsed into his previous unhappy and belligerent state. At the Lyman School for Boys, DPH worked the same magic on young delinquents. When the boys were withdrawn from DPH, they slipped back to their former fearful, tense, impatient, and quarrelsome state. I really conducted that at Maryland's Roseville Hospital, Dr. Goldberg at Kiermore and Curlin treated 47 retarded children with DPH. physiologists and pharmacologists have discovered basic mechanisms by which DPH acts upon cell and nerve cells. Normally, when such cells fire off an electrical signal, ions of potassium pass out through their enclosing membrane. I don't expect you to understand this, but you'll get a feel. And are replaced by inward moving ions of sodium. This change in the chemical balance within the cell prevents it for a short interval from responding again to a stimulus. And on hyperactive cell, however, insufficient sodium is pumped through the cell membrane, and the result, the cell's firing threshold is so low that it shoots off its electrical discharges at the slightest stimulus or even spontaneously. But when DPH is used, the normal permeability of the cell membrane to sodium ions is restored. This stabilizing and normalizing action of DPH explains why it works against a broad range of disorders, not as a panacea, but because it corrects a basic cellular malfunction that underlies illnesses with widely differing symptoms. And epilepsy prevents convulsions by correcting the hyperexcitability of brain neurons for the same reason it's effective against other disorders involving biological abnormalities, states of excessive depression, anxiety, and irritability. In relieving facial neuralgias, DPH exerts its normalizing effect upon hyperexcitable cells in the nerves of the vegetable brain. And in the heart, once again, DPH prevents a halt of arrhythmias by restoring the normal function of that organ's nerve and nerve cells. Until recently, unfortunately, most busy physicians remain unaware of the growing rate of evidence that DPH is far more than anything else. But here again, Dreiser's Medical Foundation played an important effective role that gathered together and analyzed more than 700 reports on the clinical uses of DPH and its basic mechanisms, including many published and specialized medical journals and others translated from the work of prime investigators. This sentence detailed cross-index bibliography and reviewed every practicing physician in the entire country with phenomenal results. And this is his words. Until only a few years ago, almost all prescriptions written by DPH for the use and control of epilepsy. Listen to this fact, Mr. Prince. Last year, however, psychiatrists and other physicians wrote more than 700,000 DPH prescriptions for the treatment of mental and emotional disorders and nearly 200,000 more for the treatment of migraine, facial neuralgia, and heart arrhythmias. While scores of thousands of people without epilepsy are taking benefit of DPH, this may be only a beginning. But clinical researchers have been finding still other uses for this unique chemical for the relief of bronchial asthma as a preventive for fits or shakes, which alcoholics and drug addicts experience during withdrawal treatment, and as a means of stimulating the blood flow, this is the last stage, to the optic nerve, and to arrest the vision deterioration victim of glaucoma. Other researchers have been exploring the usefulness of DPH in hastening the healing of wounds, and it does this, and treating the chronic skin ulcers that bedridden patients suffer, and does that. And a number of surgeons have been using DPH as a non-addictive alternative to narcotics for the relief of pain and anxiety in patients undergoing major surgery, and that also is. Now that this misunderstood medicine is better understood as a unique cell-stabilizing substance that is not sedative and cannot have it forming, the spread of its use will be interesting to follow. Well, that's written sort of by almost an enemy, again, if you don't know. But it doesn't, I can't tell you how many gaps, how much is left unsaid. But it's fine. He didn't say anything negative in here tonight, you know, because the journalist has to say something negative. And if you can't find anything negative to say, usually he has to look it out what he thinks. You know, look it out.
Well, you said you're a good testimony to it, I must say. I'm just cells in Jack is the case history. So that's strong in here, the case history.
Well, we've got it just so overburdened with information, I guess, and impossible problem to get people to read it.
Did you ever talk to my friend Arnold Hutschnecker in New York? Hutschnecker wrote The Will to Live, which is a great book, you know. I remember it's basically, he was an MD years ago, and I used to get my physical examinations, and now he's almost exclusively in psychiatry, I've seen him for some years. But of all the doctors I've ever met, I mean, he seems to have, he's an Austrian background or something like that, seems to have a more open mind.
Lots of them do it. Lots of them work in this field. But isn't it, I wonder, a crime that we have 1,700 papers in our office and Bob Davis from time to time, if somebody asks about the land and sends them to us? Isn't it a crime that I have this thing in my hands? Isn't there some way I can turn it over to the government?
You're trying to get a gun, aren't you?
I'm not talking about the expense of
it.
I'm not trying to get that off.
No.
No, it's nothing to do with money at all.
I know that. I meant that the real problem, Jack, is to get the damn doctors. The doctors have got to...
They wait for the government to ask. And the FDA, in a negative way, gives a stumbling block. They don't mean to be. There's no animosity there, nothing. But the doctors wait for two things, Mr. President. They wait for drug salesmen to come around and say, this is great stuff, or good stuff. Or they wait for the government, which apparently never said that thing. Now, to go and fight that battle with the FDA for a 2-cent medicine, which you won't have a patent on, is not what any of these companies are about to do.
Of course.
And it competes with their other medicines. It does things that their other medicines don't do.
I thought the damn thing is too cheap.
It's too cheap, and it's too good. It's like a tire that doesn't wear out. But the billions are right. Government can save. The billions that the government saved the hospital bill. Again, that's an important summary.
Let me do a little more. The impressive thing about this are the cases. It's the research that's been done. You've got to do not the dollars prove it, but $7 million of the research is not to be.
No, the work that was on the document. But let me point something to you. Do you see this thing is known by the average doctor as an anti-convulsant? If you just turn to this page and just glance along these symptoms, some of them are redundant, but these things have been mentioned in medical journals as symptoms and disorders for which DPH has been affected. They may not have been full papers, but I want you to look at the different disorders that this, what they think is a narrow range of.
I have that book.
I know, it's
that
mark. You can turn to that page, you can turn to any page. So you're right, it is the doctors, but the doctors wait for some signal from somebody, and I guarantee the drug companies are not good. And another thing, Mr. President, a drug, the way the FDA is set up, if you want to cure it for heart use, you've got to go to the cardiac section. If you want to clear it for migraine, you've got to go to that section. If you want to clear it for trigeminal neuralgia, you've got to go. So you can't clear it for general medicine. At least they haven't been allowed to. If they would go along with the idea that it's a self-stabilizing substance.
But the point is, too,
you clear it for one thing.
One of my doctors from a doctor's standpoint is that it does no harm. So they can sure experiment with it, can't they? Try it on anything. If it does no harm.
Yeah, what do you get to lose? I mean, there's paper, I will believe it, on scleroderma, one of the most dreadful diseases. Scleroderma. People's skin dry up, the esophagus gets tight, they can't breathe, they get depressed, and they die. We had one case that come to the office, and to my amazement, a couple of months ago, a fellow in Oklahoma, a lady had got a small stroke, and a neurologist came on the ball, gave her dilantin. She also had scleroderma. Within 3 weeks, the scleroderma started to disappear. So the guy said, well, maybe I've been hearing more about broad use of dilantin. Gave it to 29 people with scleroderma. Two didn't get better, and the others all either got better or completely well. He in China, 36 people with the normal procedures, 11 got worse, 10 didn't get better. And in other words, a difference in mathematics. Then we found a paper in 1966 in Spain, that one case is where it's a dreadful disease. And we just got this paper. Here's a letter. I put, these were letters written, doctors won't read them. I just put them together as a sample of what's true. But here's a letter that came in 5 years later from a family. And I can't expect you to read the whole book. I'd love you to. If you could, read two letters a day or three. But
you leave the book with me.
If you read that as a current thing.
This one is current.
Right. That just came current. Here's the jail study, which
send you a picture.
Send you a picture. He said 7 out of 12 or whatever. Here's a double blind study out of jail. I don't want to overbrave things, but Mr. President, if we just made it optional for a prisoner to have this medicine with his breakfast, not only would they be more controllable, but they'd be happier. They'd be able to, they would get over that. People are mostly violent and angry because they're suffering inside. And if we can relieve that suffering, we're doing them a great good. With a non-habit forming health consensus, it should be in every prison. That's automatic. It's an optional thing.
What I would like for you to do is just because I have a great deal because I think he's a rather remarkable person, he may not find agreement and so forth. When you hear back in New York, and he's a delightful guy, and he's a brilliant, brilliant man, see Hunchnecker, talk to him about this. I wonder if he's ever heard of it.
It's a good question because, as I said, every document.
Of course, he's one of the great men in the country on blood chemistry. He has his theory of remedy, one of the things, blood chemistry, which he thinks has an enormous effect. And he was the guy that first told me about what lots of all doctors do know about cholesterol, but he said blood chemistry has an enormous effect.
Well, I remember that you gave me that book.
That's right, emotional, emotional things, and that's his office, as I recall, used to be right on Park Avenue.
I think for the fun that you would enjoy reading these are a few samples of letters we've had twice a week from doctors. Please tell me why this tremendous, when we sent this book, this tremendous offense to psychology.
Yeah.
He said, I have no time to read it. This one says, when did I have time to read this? Could I understand it? It's wasteful to send it to all physicians. This one says, sending a copy of a 169th publication of DPH to every PhD in biology and every physician in the United States represents an inexcusable waste of money. Don't you realize that paper comes from trees and the too many trees are now being felled? This is a doctor for me to demand of a wasteful public. Can't you find a better way to use your money, namely help fight against pollution instead of contributing to it? I shall give it to a company which salvages and repossesses paper for reuse.
Oh my God. Well, don't let that worry.
It doesn't worry. I think it makes the point. These are some beautiful letters. No.
Most people are.
I wanted to send him a blank. I told him to take it and write me an hour later, but I didn't.
You remember my secretary, Rose Lewis?
Yes.
I'll have her give you Hunchnecker's number. She probably, our address, if they went out there, it's up to date. I'd like for you to just, I just think you would be I think you will find him a fascinating guy, and I'd like to get his evaluation. Show him the whole thing.
I'm sure as much as he'll say.
I haven't seen three. Oh, he'll say. If we ask him, if I ask him.
But she replied, then it's a matter of days.
That's my point. My point is that he can do it.
Mr. President, may I ask this?
I can ask Rose to say.
Is there anybody in government?
But you
not at the FDA. Let's just say that.
Like who?
Like the Vice President, who would give me the time. I know he thinks he's busy with things, but is there anything that he's busy with that's as important as it?
He wouldn't have the, frankly, the interest in this.
Thank you.
No.
Hello, how are you? So good to see you.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's where you're going.
I understand.
Rose, I was going to have Dr. Hunchnecker, I asked, told you, I'd like for him to give me an analysis of this dilemma. And you've got his address, haven't you, so
yes.
Forth. Could you arrange Your island being a
the way it should be done.
And say, could you come down and spend a weekend? And then talk to him a little while, and then let him go out in the evening.
Right. That's exactly
right.
Let's
do that.
It's too intensive.
We'll do that in 30 days. Now, that's my commitment. Rose, there's many who keep it blaming her. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. Look,
are you going to come to one of our parties this week or not? Next
by
week?
By the way, I don't care if I do one Tuesday.
Wow.
I'm so dramatic as a thing on Tuesday. You don't care. You won't miss me.
Not at all. Well, we're inviting you because we want you only for your. But frankly, I think they're all a pain in the neck for the people that come, not for me. But what I'm just doing is to call in the people and thank them for their support. So now I thank you. And you don't have to come.
Right.
You'll have more fun in Florida.
Thank you.
Get Proboso up there sometime to see the place. Yeah.
That's the other thought I had. Suppose I trap you, and I think maybe if you said if you were interested, you'd let me. And I
walked in.
And I spent 8 or 10 hours with him.
Good, he'd do it.
I got it together from different perspectives.
He had to take it away from some of his extracurricular activities, but I'm sure he would.
Well, I'll get him.
Oh, now that's not fair, D.D.
Yes, it is.
This is quite something. So you work it out, Rose. You got some other things you have to do over there?
Yes.
All right, fine. Well, you'll call Jack then tomorrow.
Yes, I'll call him.
Okay, she'll call. Sure, I'll do it. I'm going to see him today. Fine, baby. Bye.
Thank you.
see it again.
Between you and Alderman Keyes, maybe you can see whether Carmen Rose is the best deal we can get.